This is High Country Views. News for people who care about the West. I'm Callie Carswell. Western landscape photographer Michael Berman has described his work this way: "I am not concerned with fashioning something new. Rather, I am obsessed with retrieving what is lost. I walk in the land. Sometimes I make images." Berman, who lives in the Mimbres Valley of New Mexico, has spent years wandering and photographing southwestern deserts and the U.S.-Mexican borderlands. Though his work is rooted in the Western landscape tradition, he doesn't seek out the romantic scenes that typify landscape photography. Instead, he's drawn to forgotten places, and his sometimes dark black and white images reveal the biological and social complexities of the desert. Berman has published a series of books on the border deserts with writer Charles Bowden, and his work is in the collections of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Amon Carter Museum, and others. In this episode of High Country Views, writer Pat Toumet, who recently traveled through the Gila Desert with Michael Berman, sits down with him to talk about his craft and the draw of the desert.
Michael, I first heard of your work from a retired attorney who is an amateur photographer, who attended a workshop with you. And Norm, he went to what he expected to learn: technical details about photography, f-stops, Lightroom tricks, what kind of camera to use. And he was astonished and intrigued by the fact that you didn't go into technical things at all. You instead chose to talk predominantly about seeing. What's your approach with young guys like that, young photographers, and what are you trying to drive home for them?
I think one of the things you just said of memory, what he's remembering, really gets to the heart of it, is that technical stuff is things that you need to use. And it's really just tools, and those are things that you adapt and leave behind really quickly. But to me, the important stuff is really the things you care about. And personally, what I care about is the land itself. So often that's what I'll direct other people to. But I'm also very open, always trying to encourage people to find something very, very important to them. So that would have reflected what was going on in those workshops.
You like to say for folks to let the land guide them.
That expression really comes from maybe when I'm doing a long hike, and very often I can be in a very complicated place, and I walk at night, and I always will revert to the idea of that, you know, let the land guide you. And one of the things that happens in especially healthy landscapes, which are very rare, is that each species will get tracked by its physical ability to move through a landscape and by what they need. So, for example, out in the Cabeza Prieta, which is a wildlife refuge in the middle of a bombing range, which is, I haven't been there in a few years since all this border craziness has gone on, but which was in very good shape, is the trails were all 10, 20,000 years old, and they all made sense in terms of water because it was a landscape maybe the size of Connecticut that had no running water. So every logic in that landscape was one of water. In a sense, you have to have a very intimate relationship. In the desert, it's all about water. As long as you have water, things are fine.
Right.
And so you learn to read both where water is and also your capabilities, how you can return. Our culture is my truck.
Right.
And so that carries, you know, right, all this excess stuff. But once I leave it, then the land is really my culture.
When we went out together, I was struck by the fact that we moved and moved and moved and moved through, and we were not on trails. We didn't follow trails. We weren't in public places. And initially, we took one step out of camp, and five pregnant female elk came over the ridge, and we followed them. And then when they went, we went further up into a burn area. Now, a burn area is not a place where you would get iconic images. Is the biologist in you kicking in sometimes?
I have my biology, I sort of look at science in that a small part of science, and the same thing with art, and a small part of art is really a hyper-creative process. And I think I was fortunate to study with Jim Anderson with Peregrine Falcons at the very beginning of the Endangered Species Act. And so what I saw was basically someone who was deeply in love with a species that was disappearing. And there really was no course to follow, and they were figuring it out. So what I saw was, you know, science by the seat of the pants. But it was something that actually worked. The bird has been delisted.
Right.
And so there was a sense of in one level, science can become benchwork. It can really become repeating something and providing legitimacy for an authoritative way of seeing. But on another way, it can be really the fundamental thing of how does something work? What's going on here? And, you know, what you said to me is we're not on trails. But actually, we're on trails the whole time.
Right, of course.
What we're not on is a trail that's been
laid out. So we were following drainages. We were following, right.
Yeah, there were drainages
and trails.
We were
following pet trails.
Some of them were the old, you know, the old ranching trails that are up there. But I think a lot of it is that for me, I just don't know where I'm going when I set out. I don't know. It's to know where you're going, you know, in any sort of creative endeavors, to really not know where you're
going.
That's
right, right.
I think one of the real critical and hard things for an artist is to have purpose. We've created this idea of the artist as genius, and you know, we're supposed to go into our studio and create these incredible things. And it's really a lousy and false concept. And I'm have this idea: if I have something more important than me, then I can sort of get to work.
So you were raised in New York City, and then. You went to Colorado College, which puts you in the West, and then I'm looking at how you were pulled to these particular landscapes, the desert, really, and the Gila on the edge of it.
The Gila is probably the place I was meant to be, and that it's kind of like the girlfriend that you didn't know and you spend 20 years ignoring, and then
right there she is,
and there she is, because. The reason I first went to Mexico is the Sierra Madres. I thought, oh, there's this great, huge mountain range on a map. That has to be incredible. And what I found there was the real ability of human beings to use everything.
Right.
And one of the things that has always come out of the Gila is it was slightly set aside. If we've been able to use it, that's our value system. We've shifted landscapes. But somehow the Gila has the remnants of the great ponderosa forests of the Southwest, and it is the end of something. I'd say I'm only beginning to see it.
Do you view yourself as an environmentalist?
You know, it's sort of that thing of like,
right, it's looking for
it's
a
like,
category.
Am I an artist? Am I an environmentalist?
Right.
To me, it's you know, maybe I like to look at things, and that's my life has been trying to figure out how to get the next tank of gasoline, the cooler full of food, and to go out and to go off and to just look at things.
To hear more from this interview, see a slideshow of Berman's images, and to read Pat Toomey's story about his walkabout with Michael Berman in the Gila Desert, visit hcn.org. This has been a production of High Country News, a nonprofit covering the important stories and issues that define the American West.